Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live, across the United States of America, across Europe and the world, this is David Duke. Today, we've got a great program scheduled for you. I think it's going to be an amazing show. I'm going to bring on Mark Collette of Great Britain, who just recently created a bit of an odyssey himself. He went through and listened to my entire book, my opus, really, My Awakening, the entire 42 chapters of My Awakening. He listened to it, thought about it, and it's had a profound effect upon him, positive. I'm really happy to hear it. It's had really a profound effect upon so many millions of people around the world, and there's a reason why Amazon, it's a 5-star rated book. It's loved, and it's just amazing, the reaction to that book. So we're going to talk about that, some things he's interested in, and some interesting subjects concerning the book today. That'll be the primary focus of today's program, which I think you'll find fascinating in a lot of ways. You'll hear my rationality behind the book, the reasons I did this book, how I approached the book, why I approached it in the way that I did, and some of the most important aspects that I think of the book, as well as what Mark Collette, another person who just finished listening to the entire book, he's also read it, but listening to the entire book on tape. And it's going to be an interesting show. I want to start, though, before we go into the book, just by a quick note that they're doing the same thing to Marine Le Pen in France that they did to Donald Trump. It's interesting. There has been unleashed massive attacks in the French media, headlines of the French media, that David Duke, oh, you know who David Duke is, that caricature, that creation of the media, which isn't, of course, David Duke. It's a creation of the Zio media that wants to try to discredit my powerful ideas by making me into something that I'm not. But they're using that to say, oh, my God, David Duke actually on his radio program and on his website and Twitter actually said some kind words about Marine Le Pen, that Marine Le Pen is doing good work and hopefully she will win the election and become the head of this great nation of France. In recent days, she's talked out very extensively and very powerfully against Merkel. In fact, even in one conference, she was in a parliamentary setting, and Merkel was there, and Hollande was there, and she basically called out Merkel as a traitor to Europe, a person who was causing the death and the assault against absolutely huge numbers of Europeans, the destruction of our culture, our heritage, our very people. And she did the same thing to Hollande, basically calling them traitors, which they are, because there's no fundamental greater form of treason than a person who sells out his own tribe, his own heritage, his own family, his own future, his own self determination, his own self-control, his own unique human expression of his tribe, of his people, of his race. That's ironic, isn't it, though, that that's exactly what Miss Le Pen and what Donald Trump has tapped into. You know, it's interesting, if you actually read the media, they say, I'm the epitome of evil, therefore Donald Trump must be evil. They say, Le Pen must be evil because I like them. Of course, that argument is about as stupid as anything I've ever heard in my life. I remember watching the movie a few years ago, Scarface, with Al Pacino. Very powerful movie, but a very degenerate movie. But in the movie, this drug dealer, very bad guy, murderer, drug dealer, cocaine addict, and so forth, he aspires and wants this beautiful woman to be his wife, to create a family. So by their logic, if this bad guy, Al Pacino, with all these terrible values about drug dealing, if he wants a beautiful woman and wants to create a family with a beautiful woman, you better not want a beautiful woman. You better not want to create a family like that or to seek one. I don't think there's anything wrong with a young man seeking a woman of beauty and a woman of taste and erudition and value, who have a good value system, or for a woman to do the same thing, to seek an intelligent, decent, handsome man. I mean, but you see how they do. This is a complete non sequitur. It's totally ridiculous argument, but this is the kind of argument they use. And then they create this caricature of me to make people out to be bad. But the truth is, folks, that Marine Le Pen really at her core is not me, and neither is Donald Trump. But they have basically, both Donald Trump and Marine Le Pen have tapped in to the emotions, the spirituality, the history, the character of our people. She talks about the French culture and the French heritage, but she doesn't speak much in direct terms about the fact that the French people are in terms of their reality, their existence. They are the tribe fundamentally of Franks with additional other Europeans, but they're a European people of not only European culture and the Christian faith and the culture surrounding that, whether or not they're believers. They also, the art, the literature, the music, the architecture, the great cathedrals like Notre Dame in Paris or the Eiffel Tower, or we can go back further. We can, the same Renaissance, Western European Renaissance that the French revere in their Louvre, and the same art and history that the British revere in their British Museum, or they revere in the art institutes of Germany, or they revere in the Smithsonian in America. You know, this is far beyond anything about simply cultural manifestations, because remember that cultural manifestations and political manifestations are simply the essence of the spirit or the soul of people. And the way that biologists today and behavioral geneticists talk about this is the fact that just as a particular seed, a genetic structure of a particular plant, or even the differences between the species, or even breeds of flowers or animals, has a different expression in not only the way those animals or plant life, the way they look, and the way they react to the environment, in other words, their behaviors, but also in terms of the genetics that dictate that, or the genetics that affect that. And it's not just genetics, of course, folks. It's also environment that affects our development. But the interesting thing is that every people on the earth, every life form on the earth in their natural form, the most basic instinct of all, the most basic natural law of all that is in every living thing is a preservation of its own genes, meaning the preservation of its children, to be like their forefathers, to exist, to live. And in terms of tribal relations and racial relations, the truth is, as I talk about in my awakening, the truth is that we still live in effect a tooth and claw world, even though we call ourselves human beings and we say that we're for human rights. The truth is there are constant struggles for dominance between people. There are struggles of one people to conquer another, to control another. That's what you really call globalism. Globalism is the most destructive human institution of all, because it basically reaches out, controlled by these international bankers who are nothing more than criminal thieves. It reaches out and tries to control every corner of the world, every people of the world, to dissolve their respective cultures. The media tries to create this universal culture as if this is going to stop conflict. Well, the truth is there's always going to be races. There's always going to be nations and people. There's always going to be subgroups. There's always going to be tribes fighting. And globalism ultimately is nothing more in its present creation is basically a struggle of the Jewish tribe to dominate and its power in the globe for all sorts of objectives, their economic well-being or power within nations of the world, whether it be Europe or America. They orchestrate wars that they think are beneficial to them. They now have the Jewish state of Israel, which is an ethno-state, is a Jewish supremacist state that in the lifetime of the Palestinians has been based on terrorism against them, ethnically cleansing 600,000 Palestinians from their land. And still every day, they're going about stealing the land of this occupied territory and stealing the land, making Jewish settlements where a Palestinian can't even live. This is a racist, supremacist nation. And for this to be created in this sea of non-Jews was created through power of the United States and Britain and France and the European world, which has been the most powerful scientific and military power on the earth. So what they do is they realize that Israel could not have been created, and it was created not by simply the work of Jews themselves in that land, and not by working with the Arabs for a multicultural state of which everybody's going to have human rights. It was done by taking over the politics of Great Britain, the Rothschild infiltration, for instance, of the Churchill family, and basically bringing forth the Balfour Declaration as a deal to get the Jewish power structure of America. And again, they often say that if you talk about Jewish power in media or government or politics or banking, that's just a canard. That's what Mr. Abraham Foxman of the ADL or Mr. Greenblatt would say. That's a canard. However, the British government recognized it. The Jews recognized it. Even Lloyd George wrote a lot extensively about the Balfour Declaration. He's been in government. He was in government for decades. And he said, well, this was a contract with the Jews, so they recognized Jewish power. The most powerful financier in America during this period was Bernard Baruch. Some of the biggest banks in America were organizations and banks called like Cunnan Loeb Company. Jacob Schiff, a Jewish Zionist, ran Cunnan Loeb Company, and according to Jewish books, he was the biggest financier of the Bolshevik Revolution. And worldwide, the Jews promoted the Bolshevik Revolution because they saw the Tsar as anti-Semitic. And because some Jews developed this messianic idea that the Jews, through communism, would again dominate the world. Whether it was going to be good for the people of the world, we don't know. But one thing we do know is that communism killed tens of millions of people. So globalism has really been an expression of this Jewish will to power. And our destruction, and the destruction of so many non-Europeans around the world, like so many of the Arab peoples and other people around the world, has ultimately been caused by this Jewish ethnic supremacism and this drive to have supremacy over our countries, our academia, our media, our government, our policies, and to create these insane wars that have killed millions as well as many of our own and caused much economic destruction of America. How much has the Iraq war cost? Trillions of dollars. So my awakening was an attempt to address this. And as a young man, I had read hundreds and hundreds of books. And of course, I didn't even write the book till I was getting up there. I mean, I did the book. I was almost 50 years of age when we published it. I was 48 in 1998. So I had a lifetime of reading and study of this material. I read, not only did I read massive amounts of books from patriots on our side, but I also read, I can't tell you how many hundreds, maybe thousands actually, including articles, 5,000-10,000 articles by Jews over the years, outlining what their ideas were, what their values were, what they were trying to do. And they basically said, in their own words, everything, for instance, that the Protocols said in a form of literature. The Protocols was a creation of these very intelligent men who'd studied the Jewish question as I had much later, almost 100 years later. And what they did in the Protocols is they honed down Jewish literature and Jewish writings into a form of literature which created a meeting of the elders, which was a literature or a literate form of expression to try to illustrate what the plan was or what the process was of this Jewish domination of the world. It talked about their very conscious control and of the banking system in the world. The most powerful bank in the world, of course, today is the Federal Reserve. It talked about their control of media, which they called the press during those days, media. The controlled opposition principle is something they talk about deeply in that book. They talk about the absolute degeneracy and really the terror, the overwhelm, what they call the overwhelming terror of Bolshevism, which came to pass under Jewish domination in the Soviet Union and then later in much of Europe and around the world. The principles were faulty principles. So this is what I looked at as a young man, and I didn't see any books that really wrapped it all up together, that did it in an academic way, that quoted Jewish sources, that proved the points, that when I talk about control of the media, that laid out the control of media in the book and how the Jews had seized just almost total control over Hollywood, for instance, and the television industry from that. I talked about the rise of the television networks in America run by three Russian Jews who were, again, had those same Jewish values, and how that they bent television and television news to their interest and their agenda. And part of that agenda was open borders, the 1965 Immigration Act. I talk about their influence in terms of the academic society, how race was not real, that race was a social contract. At the same time, when they were busy creating a state in Israel based on the Jewish race, and while they themselves talked about the reality of race and the reality of that the Jewish people are a lineage and a heritage, and they have a great relatedness there, and Jews must stand up and defend Jews and just Jewish interests and preserve the Jewish race and the threat to Jews of intermarriage, all these things, the same media that promoted these Jewish organizations never called them to the count on any of their ideas. They were criticizing and attacking white people. So I decided to put this all together. When I decided to do this book, I decided to not write it strictly as a history book or a book of common political discourse, but as a narrative, basically to tell a story. I decided to tell the story of my awakening, to personalize it, to make it into a story, which it is an interesting story of my awakening from a young boy to the realities, the connections I had with historic and traditional America, the values of traditional America, the way life was growing up in the 50s and 60s in the United States of America, and in Europe, by the way. I spent some time in Europe as a very young man, went to Dutch kindergarten. And then how I was somewhat seduced by some of the leftist points of view. I didn't really have any contact with any right-wing groups to get me straight at that moment. And then, luckily, I did a paper for school, and I had a teacher that had me do the opposite point of view, which was all about the forcible integration of education and the idea that the races are exactly the same. And whether or not this was true or not, and I started to investigate it. So in the book, I start my awakening first on the racial issue, my awakening on these principles. I talk about race and reason. I also talk about how America, even our history, has been converted from some sort of a history of people understanding race, which most of our founding fathers did. In fact, almost all of our founding fathers took part in the Society for Liberation, American Colonization Society, which was a society to be fair to African Americans, to free them from slavery, but to resettle them in Africa where they could make their own society, however they chose fit to do so, that blacks should run their own affairs and live according to their own values the same way that we do. Whether or not we think those values are the greatest ones in the world, we certainly think that our values of Europe are great. And how that they basically lied to us and basically conflated this idea that our founding fathers were actually pro-immigration and pro-integration of education, which devastated education in this country and led to so much violence and so much conflict between us. I started investigating the core of all this, like heredity or environment. What are the most powerful elements, heredity or environment? Is it heredity that makes a person the way they are? Is it environment, or is it a combination of both? And I structure the science, the latest science on that. And then I go into the roots of racial differences, how race is fundamentally an example of subspecies in nature. It is a reality. It is created by geographic separation. It is actually created by separation of one gene pool from another. That's the reality of it. And different races create different societies, different languages, different cultures, different heritages, different modes of behavior. In Africa, for instance, you had the polygamous type lifestyle where the African warrior could seduce and create as many offspring as he could by his power. Whereas in Europe, the male became the protector of women and the creator of what's called the nuclear family, which actually was an evolutionary progressive thing for the environment of the Ice Ages. The same thing is true for the Asians. I go into these roots of racial difference, the evolution involved in it, the evolution of race itself, how race came about. I go into race history, which is really the history of the world. If you want to look at the creations of nations, cultures, societies, it's really a history of demography. And when one race or one tribe invades another tribe and takes it over, this is what becomes reflected in the rise of those societies, that nations are not simply proposition nations. They're really, the core of them come from the genetics of the people, which is both the heritage, the traditions, and the genetics, the expression. And in many ways, culture is expression of genetics as much as it is from environment. I talked about the great threat to the European world and how we were the true small minority on the planet. And that it seemed that there was a leftist program or a major program to basically eliminate the European race. And then later I started to discover and realize that the source of this massive immigration policy was that Jewish tribalist power that took over media, that took over academia, that took over banking. They were able to finance it through that. Took over politics, and all those factors could work together for their ultimate power, and ultimately they created the State of Israel. I also talk about sex and society. And then I go into the part three of the book, the Jewish question. I talk about understanding the first steps that I learned about the Jewish question, which where I started out on that was learning that communism wasn't a Russian revolution. And I document that thoroughly in the book. And then I go into the roots of Jewish supremacism. I talk about both Torah and Talmud and how there's no more racist books in the world than those, especially the Talmud, which is the height of ethnicity, hatred toward other people, the idea of Jewish supremacy. I go into Jewish media supremacy, Jewish role in communism, Jewish political supremacy. I'm going to wrap this up right after these words from our sponsors, and we're going to come back with the very erudite, intelligent Mark Collette of Great Britain, who just finished listening to the entire book. Back in a minute, folks. Okay, folks, this is David Duke. We've got a special show going on today about my awakening, and Mike was so taken back by the book, he suggested to me that we do a program on the book because he was going to be able to express his own feeling on that. Let me run through the book, finish it up in about 3 or 4 minutes, and then I'll bring on Mark, and we'll talk about whatever area he'd like to talk about concerning this. So the second part of the book, or the third part actually, is the Jewish question. I go into the Jewish question of communism, their role in communism, the roots of Jewish supremacism, both religion and their history, which is absolutely amazing. I go into the Jews and the relationship to communism and so-called civil rights. I go into Jewish media supremacy, how they've taken over the media, and I prove without a shadow of a doubt their incredible power over the media. They don't control every single outlet of media, that's for sure, but they certainly have the power now that because they control so much of it, they can ridicule, they can attack, they can destroy the career of anybody that would even dare to talk about the things that I'm talking about in media. I go into the roots of anti-Semitism. I go into the economic exploitation of this Jewish tribal entity for years, the usury, which is nothing more than like loan sharking, and the many organized criminal activities of the Jewish people, which proportionally were far more involved in the excesses of slavery and organized crime than anything the Italians were ever involved in mafia. They're still today involved in it with human trafficking, and they really are the biggest sources of organized crime in the world, and the biggest organized crime group in the world is the so-called Russian mafia. So I go to the roots of anti-Semitism in their criminality and treachery, which has caused a response. I go into Israel, the Jewish supremacist state, and prove that. I go into the supremacism that they exacted through terror in Israel, through terror, ethnic cleansing, and destruction of the Palestinians, and wars against other people like the Lebanese and the Syrians and others. I go, in chapter 24, I go into Israel and its treachery against America, and I show the terrorism and the absolute fact that Israel is not an ally of America. We're their ally, but they're our enemy. And they have actually committed terrorism against us, and this Jewish tribal treason in America has led us to disasters such as the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. I go into the Jewish role worldwide in the invasion of our countries through massive immigration, migration, asylum, and so forth, and this is their revenge. And I show their own writing showing how they are looking forward to and openly promote the destruction of our people. And then I go in the last part, After I finish my awakening on the subject, then the rest of it's very fascinating. I think it's about my life and the fight for the truth on these matters, my political life, my time at LSU, my travels around the world, my chapter, my Indian Odyssey, which has made a big impact around the world, my time teaching overseas in Laos and Southeast Asia, my impressions, my visit to Israel as a young man, which I just about didn't survive, my experiences and connection with my heritage in Greece when I went there, my meeting with European leaders back at a very young age in the early 1970s. Then I talk about the incredible suppressions of me and my movements by the media. I talk about my early involvement in the KKK, what it was all about. And I talk about how it rose. And then later, I also talk about how the Jews treated that and how they distorted the things that I did. I finally realized to take a different path, and I did take a different path. That's called delusionment in new directions. And then I talk about my political history. I give a vision for our European people, and then I close it with a vision of what we must do now. So, Mark Collette, welcome to the show.
Hello, David. It's great to be back. It's a real pleasure, as always.
Yeah, you, I mean, every time I've talked to you over the last 3 or 4 weeks, it's just like you've just been bubbling over with excitement about the book. You've completed it now on audio, haven't you?
I have. But before we get into the book, I just want to say it's really important to understand why the establishment attacks you every time you speak out in support of Trump or Marine Le Pen. And it's basically because, well, I think it's because people like Donald Trump, people like Marine Le Pen, they always talk about the importance of culture. And culture is, of course, extremely important. But they never make the connection between culture and race. And that is a connection that only people such as yourself make. And that's what makes you so important to our struggle. You see, Donald Trump, Marine Le Pen, they start people on a journey for truth and knowledge. And those people end their journey with you. They end their journey with the realization that this wonderful culture, this deep heritage, these absolutely incredible traditions that can be found throughout the whole Western world that underpin our civilization are fundamentally only there because of white people. And unfortunately, if white people cease to exist, so will our traditions, our heritage, and our culture. And it's that final important link, that final important step, that final part of the journey on the quest for truth that the media, the establishment, and our enemies are so fearful of people completing. They're so scared of people coming to the ultimate conclusion and finding that fundamental truth and realizing the importance of race.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's it. And also, I think, in fact, other European writers throughout history have talked about one reason that the Jewish establishment, the Jewish power structure, doesn't want people to understand race, because if Europeans realize that we have racial interests and racial heritage and values and vital things that we're concerned about in terms of our own children, then they're also going to realize that there's another race among us who is far more, quote, racist in that sense than anything that we represent, who are working for and toward our destruction. Now, this is the most incredible issue, I think, that exists among us, because we wouldn't be in this condition. We didn't get in this condition because there's some sort of a genetic flaw in our people. I remember watching a pretty good pro-culture and supposedly pro-white speaker, Godfrinson, at one of the National Renaissance conferences, tell us how that the white race was at the top of the world, you know, in the 1910s. What happened? Is there some flaw in our people? Where if there's any flaw in our people, it was not recognizing that we had within our midst an alien people with an alien agenda, with a lot of power, super supremacist, racist values, and great hatreds against our people, who grabbed control over our media, our government, a lot of the banking, so they were able to finance their things, including communism and then Zionism. They were able then to take over our society and move us against our best interest. Even though it really should be obvious to our people that our best interest at heart would not be having these policies where our own people are wiped out. Doesn't every kind of life on this earth, every breed, every species, don't every kind of life on this earth have a drive to preserve themselves and their children? That's the only thing that's natural, really.
They certainly do. And I think one of the powerful things you said in the book, or one of the most powerful things you said, is when you describe the plight of Western man as essentially being like a tiger that had been blindfolded, that was being essentially tormented by a mouse. We are not the weak ones. We are not unable to defend ourselves. It is just that we have been blindfolded and we can't see the nature of our foe. And that was quite near the end of the book, but that was something that stuck with me as a really powerful statement and a perfect analogy for the situation we find ourselves in. And throughout the book, what I enjoyed the most is I really like facts and figures. I think they're absolutely fantastic. And this book was a treasure trove of facts, figures, references, and it can all be backed up, and that makes it so powerful. But I also understand that normal people, regular Joes on the street, the people we need to reach out to, aren't motivated by facts and figures. They're motivated more by emotion. And what I thought was so wonderful about the book is that it was filled with so many facts and figures, but it was also such a wonderful emotional journey that it made it so rich, so vibrant, and it wasn't dry. Because many books that are filled with facts and figures can be slightly dry, can almost be a little stale. But My Awakening is anything but that. It's so interesting, it's so engaging, it draws you in. And when you're listening to the audio version, you just can't stop listening. And the fact that all the facts, all the figures, all of the references and resources in there are completely woven together with your heartfelt journey from being a young man who initially was committed to the idea of equality, who had the veil in front of his eyes, and slowly you go from being a young man who is on a quest for journey to being the man you are today, who, if you don't mind me saying, the legend you are today. And having that emotional journey alongside all the facts, all the figures, all the references, just makes the book so digestible and such a joy to read or listen to. And the fact that you read it in such a compelling fashion, it makes it so more personal. And I can only say to everyone who's listening, if you've read the book, or even if you haven't read the book, listen to it on archive.org. It is the most compelling thing I've ever listened to, and I can't recommend it enough. It really is a masterpiece.
Well, thanks. You know, I've gotten probably over these last 20 years, because, well, it's 18 years since the book was first published. It has been updated, by the way, folks, because I try to update the latest science each time I put out an edition, which will probably come in a year or two from now. But the interesting thing is I've probably had a million letters or emails of people who just told me that not only did they get awakened by the book, that my awakening as presented in the book was their awakening, but just told me that the book completely inspired them and motivated them. And I can't tell you how many letters I've gotten from all over the world, even among non-white people who were inspired by it too, interestingly enough. Because I got letters from a lot of South Americans, a lot of even people in Africa, Asia, India. It's really kind of interesting, because the idea of standing up for your people and understanding that the Jewish supremacist issue is a problem not just for the Europeans, a existential problem for us, but it's also a problem for them because they get the brunt of these wars and all these other things. that they were very, very inspired by the book. In fact, there's a young man that works very closely with my website and monitors Twitter for me, lets me know what's going on with Twitter so I can get in there and post. And he tells me he was a young man who was becoming corrupted by the Jewish culture that took over our culture, and of the drug culture and the values of that. And he told me when he read my book, it just totally changed his life. And that's, I guess, the thing that I'm most proudest for is the fact that I've turned a lot of people around, not simply in their awareness of the world, but inspired them to build their body, to build their mind and their knowledge, and to lead a courageous life, a life of achievement, a life of courage and honor and duty. And when you do that, when you have that kind of purpose in your life, the other aspects of your life, whether it be your home life or your health and everything else, starts coming into line. We have to have a purpose to live. And what greater purpose is there than to work for the beauty and the wonder of our children, the beauty we see when we look into the eyes of our babies and ultimately our grandchildren, the beauty that we see when we look into the eyes of our lover, for a woman to her husband or a man to his wife, are the beauty and the sense of greatness and tradition and the carrying forth when we look and talk to our parents and our parents talk to their children. It's an amazing thing, and it can have a big impact not only on people understanding the politics of the world. No wonder they hate me. I'm the ultimate evil because, for one thing, is that I'm not sold out because I continue to fight for the same principles. I had a friend whose son went off to a liberal university and he wanted to pursue a career academically. And he realized he wasn't going to get that career. And he basically kind of Stockholm syndrome gave up the cause. And now he even speaks for the enemy. And the funny thing is about all that, you know, if I would have turned, if I would have gone against our own people and in support of the Jewish power structure, for instance, and the reality, because anybody that talks about racism and then can't talk about Israel and the Jewish ethnic supremacism over our media and our government and our academia and how they discriminate against non-Jews, how they taken over these media and how they're destroying everybody else. They're putting the 98% of the people of America on the back burner, which are damaging to them in favor of the 2% Jewish people of America or the 1% in Europe. And when, you know, if I would have, see, the issue of me is not the fact that I was in the Klan, a nonviolent Klan. In fact, they should be praising me because I always preach nonviolence because I know that doesn't help our cause. And I know that it's not really right to hurt an innocent person, but we have an ultimate right to defend ourselves and stand up. But the reason they hate me then is not because of my background defending the white race. It's because that I'm still doing it. If I would have given up, if I would have changed, if I'd have gone over to the pro-Jewish side, they would be praising me. They'd be saying, isn't it great that David Duke could overcome his past? That's why they hate me. And maybe that's a proof of my worth or my contribution to our effort.
I agree. And I think the other thing that can be said for your book and your personal journey is the fact that along that journey, you started it from such humble beginnings. You see, most people in politics who have a career in politics, they start from such an elevated position, especially in the UK. You see, most of our politicians are career politicians. They come from extremely wealthy backgrounds. They never make any sacrifices. And they literally dance to the establishment tune to get more and more money. And you started as a regular American lad who followed through because he knew it was the right thing to do. And you're such a talented man. You've traveled all over the world. You had so many opportunities in front of you. And at any time, you could have said, well, I know this is right, but if I back away from it, I could achieve more in the business world. I could achieve more in my personal life. But you were willing to make the sacrifices, and you've been willing to make those sacrifices and demonstrated you were willing to make those sacrifices for your whole life. And that is something that shines through in the book and makes you stand out as a man who is a man of conviction, honor, and courage. And there's been times when I was reading in the book about you being incarcerated unfairly, being held in cells with gangs of blacks who were sharpening tools ready to stab you at the drop of a hat. And you faced such overwhelming odds. You faced absolutely incredible challenges where they've besmirched your name, where they've taken crooked legal cases against you, and you've never bowed your head once. You've always kept fighting, because at the core of your journey, at the core of my awakening, is the fact that you knew you had to do what was right, and you would never back down, regardless of the number of people you had to face, regardless of the odds. And I think that's what makes the book even more incredible. That's what makes your journey such a powerful and such an emotive story. And that's why I was hooked. I mean, I was listening to maybe 2 to 3 hours a day, which it just shows how gripped I was. I mean, that's like watching a Lord of the Rings film every day. And it was just so moving. And by the end of it, I felt not only moved, but I felt like I had a deeper understanding of you as a person. I felt it really brought me closer to you. And that's something I'm really thankful for. And I think all the listeners out there today, please go listen to the book, listen to My Awakening on archive.org, and I think you'll have a deeper understanding of who David is as a person, and the degree that he's put himself on the line for us, for our movement, and for the very future of our people.
Well, Mark, you know, you've had a shorter career. You're a lot younger than I am, but you've seen over the years a lot of people get excited, come into the movement, and then they find out, if they're a leader, that it's so damn hard fighting this overwhelming evil power that will do anything to try to stop us. And the reason why that they're trying to do, and why they're willing to do anything, is because they know that we have the potential to just change everything in the course of a dime. They are very, very upset with the election of Donald Trump. It's actually enthusiastically changing people throughout Europe. It's giving them hope. It's giving them drive. It's giving them inspiration. Same thing in America. And I feel like in a lot of ways that my life's work is coming to fruition, because we really are winning. People are beginning to realize. And that's why I feel that when they attack me so much, when I'm the big evil, as they present in media around the world, it really shows that, you know, I've done some very, very good work. But I can't, many times when I've faced severe trials and problems and difficulties, even in personal relationships, because of the stress and the hardship of the movement and all the things involved in that. It's so damn hard. But I decided long ago, I made a commitment when I was actually 13 years old. I started my revelations even at 12. But I finally committed my life to this. And I said, it doesn't matter how hard it is. That's not important. My life, no matter how long I live, it's just a microcosm. It's just a speck in the history of the earth or the universe. But the survival of our great people and the values that we represent and moving this world toward going through the ether with great achievements, maybe even going to the stars themselves, is certainly worth whatever sacrifice I've got to make. And when you understand it that way, Mark, it's no longer a sacrifice. It's almost a privilege. It is a privilege that we have to even suffer for the things we believe in. I believe a lot of the early Christians, you know, they literally, when they were going to the stake, they didn't enjoy being burned alive for their beliefs or being crucified themselves for their beliefs. But they knowing this and knowing that their beliefs is what counted, they almost went to the process with a smile, with an inner feeling of worth, of an inner feeling that they've done the right thing, no matter what, how evil their enemies could treat them. And if we can get that kind of mentality into our people and into our leaders around the world, we can win. But the only way we can win, and this is what I pressed in the book, basically the book is about my awakening on the idea of race and tribe and demography and identifying the ultimate racist tribe that's trying to control the planet and control our policies, leading us to wars and destruction and a media that's going against every higher human value. But also, it's then understanding that even they are a product of the race. Even the Jewish question itself is actually a culmination of the racial principle, the racial thought, because that's ultimately what it is. They have a genetic imprint as well as a psychological or a cultural imprint. So even the Jewish question itself is an understanding of tribalism, and it's a tribalism that any biologist, any evolutionary scientist can understand. And if you begin to, and that's what I think the best thing about the book, in the close of the book, from the time I learned about the realities of heredity and race and the power of that in creating great cultures or great peoples, great tribes, and are destroying great peoples or great tribes. When you realize that, and then I go to the Jewish question, and at the end of the Jewish question, I show what their role is and how that wraps it back into the Jewish question as well. That's pretty unique, I think, for a book of our movement, but I think it's a book that's very, very true. It conforms to the real reality of the world without overthrowing this tyranny above us, who controls our central nervous system with their media and their control of academia. Unless we challenge that and bring this out and make people aware of this, there's no possible way we can ever save our people or that we'll exist in the world anymore. Closing comment, my friend, we've only got about a minute.
I just want to say thank you for your book. Thank you for everything you've done for the movement. And it's been an honor, not just appearing on your podcast, not on your radio show, but it's an honor knowing you, David. You're a credit to everything we've ever done. Thank you.
Well, my heartfelt thanks to you, Mark, and to all of you out there who've supported my work, because without your support and love, not only your funding, which helps do what we do, and we've got to pay the bills, and it's pretty tough right now, but also your spiritual support of me is what's enabled me to do this all these years, because I've always used that, like, in a sense, money in the bank of my spiritual bank that I can draw on to rededicate myself. And I hope you rededicate yourselves as well. Go to daviddukes.com. We're going to post also a link, and you can go to my Twitter account too, Dr. David Duke, at Dr. David Duke, and you can go down the page and you can find direct links to my awakening. You can download and listen to your leisure. Enjoy it. It's my gift to you, my gift to the world. Thank you so much. Love you. Back again on Monday, folks. Bye-bye.